Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Yo.
So, After Things is where we kind of talk about being a creative person, developing your own path, and figuring things out, which we're all trying to do ourselves. And a few weeks ago, actually more than a month ago, we got a great question from Ken Peleshock and Peleshock. P-E-L-E-S-H-O-K. That's how the name is spelled.
Ken's been a long-time supporter.
Ken's a regular.
Yeah, he's the best.
He has an awesome last name that sounds like a prehistoric creature that, like, would eat crocodiles.
Yeah.
So Ken wrote, he says, and we've touched upon this a little bit, but here's the full thing. I was wondering, perhaps it's an After Things topic, if you had any advice on overcoming that gap in perceived quality associated with self-published or self-produced content. I was at Toronto Comic Con last weekend, which a month ago, my fault, and there were many sad-looking people trying to sell their self-published books, comics, videos, etc. As an inspiring author, I approached them all with an open mind. Some of the stuff looked very good. Some of it was sad. When the con closed, it looked like most of them were packing away boxes full of unsold goods. Regardless, whether they were talented or delusional ones, they seemed to leave a lot more unsold product than cash. Assuming I don't somehow land up a huge book deal tour, how do I avoid this fate? I don't particularly care how my books are sold, or even if they are sold so much as they actually are read. Also, how can I tell whether I'm one of the talented or delusional ones?
Man, can I tell you the big secret of publishing success?
Yes, please.
I'll tell you my theory about it, and you could tell me whether or not I'm right. And you're probably not going to like hearing it, but it's better to know it than not know it. If you look at the New York Times bestsellers, the top-selling books outside of your Stephen Kings, your Dean Koontz's, and your Andrew Maines, oftentimes, especially in nonfiction, are all people who are famous and beloved for something besides the book. Dave Ramsey hits number one on the bestseller list because he hosts a daily financial talk show where he gets people calling in and gives financial advice. And he has millions. He's number three in the entire country. And when he gets around to writing a book saying essentially the same stuff that's in this other platform, everybody buys it, and they all buy it at the same time, and it hits number one on there.
I will put a contrary point of view out there, though, Brian. It's easy to look and see that this person sold a lot of books and this person's famous. But when you look at all the famous people that write books that don't sell, it's huge. It's huge. You know, like when I had my book Angel Killer come out right at the same time as my TV show, my publisher was like, can you write a letter explaining why you wrote this book so people know that you wrote this book? Because we have a problem where celebrities writing books that aren't good, and it's not an automatic bestseller more cases than not. It's not. Dave Ramsey wrote a good book. Dave Ramsey has a TV show because he has good content. When you get people going into other areas, you know, you get O'Reilly writing fiction. From what I understand, his fiction's pretty good. He works with a good co-author. It's a pretty good novel. And so being famous can help good rise to the top. If it's crap,
that's a very good point. That's the prerequisite is that it be good. But on top of that, and I'm going to use you as an example. When you I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here, but like you knew when it came to going to these conventions with publishers and book buyers or whatever, you knew that you needed to do more than say, I wrote a very good book, please read it. You brought the show. You brought Andrew Main to those events, and you performed magic at them, and you engaged them, and you told stories about your television show or whatever.
If I was able to charge my publisher for what I did for them to promote my book, would I charge a corporate client for what I did?
Exactly, right?
It would be, that's part of building the brand. In Ken's question, though, going to like when you're at one of these comic type conventions or whatever, you control it. Somebody comes up to your table and they see this. And I'm going to give you some examples of here people I think that, and I mean, first thing we talk about on a previous one is avoid using the word buy, buy so-and-so. which I did early on, and that's one of the hallmarks that not – it doesn't mean – you know, there are pro books that say by – this is written by so-and-so, but it's the exception, not the rule. That you have to, one, does your product look professional? And, you know, more importantly, does it read professional? And so many things that come out are not well done. People write it, and then as soon as they finish it, they're in a hurry to put it out there in the world and not put it through the process to make sure that it gets better. They just want a miracle to occur. They're like, oh, I said the magic words. Now let fortune find me. And that's not what it means. It means hard, hard work. I know when I write a book, as soon as I finish that book, I call it a first draft. The first, because there will be many drafts that come after that. And I don't just go, hey, I'm done, slap a cover on it and put it online. And that's the number one mistake I think people make. As soon as it's done or it's barely done, they just put it out there.
Well, I guess let's talk real quick about the in the moment nature of here, I just widened up the shot for you. Like, it's one thing, like, let's say you made a good book and you believe in it. And now all of a sudden you're going to this convention where you know people buy books. And whether it's a Dragon Con or a fan convention or whether it's a professional convention, all of a sudden you find yourself in what amounts to a 10-foot by 10-foot cubicle in a sea of cubicles, and you need to get people to buy your book. The worst thing you can do is say, hey, you should buy my book. And if what you want them to do is to buy, what you need to do is tell a story and give a performance. And granted, it is a one-on-one performance. You are performing as if you're doing a one-man radio show, but it is for the one person live that you're saying. You're like, hey, man, I want you to wrap your mind around this. What if a serial killer knew magic and used magic to make people go crazy because all he wanted was to see the world burn and watch chaos on there? What if the only thing that could stop him was the daughter of a magician who grew up within magic and left that world and ended up joining the FBI? Imagine, and then you tell a vignette or whatever, and by the time you're done talking, they feel like they've been given a gift of this sketch. And then it's like, and it's only $5 or $10 or whatever it is. And then it's like, at that point, you want to have them feel like they owe you something for the experience of having heard just the sketch of your story is what I would recommend. I don't know.
Can I take a slightly more meta look at the question? Because I think this is oftentimes a problem that short circuits people when they want to get into something, and everything is so daunting that you tend to staple a lot of different questions together and act like they're one question, you know? So it's like, how do I not be the guy at the comic book convention that's bringing home more unsold stuff than money and their stuff sucks? You know, that's the question, right? But within that, that's like asking Frodo Baggins, how do you, you know, stop the forces of Mordor while he's sitting in the Shire, you know? Like,
you have to get the eagles to take you.
Yes, exactly. You have to do a million different steps in between, you know? Like, there are so many different elements of that journey before you get to the point where you're able to say, like, okay, I have a product that I'm happy with. I have a strategy that I like. I have a price point that I'm happy with. I have a following. I have it is a calculated risk for me to go to this convention because I know people that sell similar things to me sell X amount of them, and that is about what I'm going to pay for this table. I'm going to split a table with somebody as opposed to buying one myself. Like, there's a million different questions that go into this kind of one thing.
Agreed. And I think that his last question was, how can I tell if I'm delusional or talented? And I think that, you know, one, you're never going to know. That's the step number one. Have a process. This is what I say before. Have a process. I finish a book. I love parts of it. I don't like parts of it. My next step is I give my book to two people. I give it to my agent, Erica Silverman, and I give it to Justin Robert Young, and I wait to see what they come back to me. And I try to take the approach of David Copperfield. You know, he's a hero to us. David Copperfield, if you go see him after a show and he knows you, he'll say, what didn't you like? He doesn't want to hear you go, oh, this is great. He wants to know, what didn't you like? Because he wants to know, if you say, I didn't get this part or I didn't get that part, he's going to try to make that better by the next show. And that's what you need to know, is you need to care about, want to know what other people love so you know it's good, but you want to know, what didn't you like? You know, I have an editor whose job is to tell me what didn't work, not to put gold stickers all over the book and hand it back to me.
Well, and that's a huge part of it. And that's like getting the quality of a product up to where you need it to be is probably the biggest thing, because all the confidence that you need that is required to make – to have conversations like, should I go to this convention? Can I confidently talk to strangers about buying this thing? Comes from the confidence of you completing a project and understanding that you want to get it out into the world. It's putting the cart before the horse to say, hey, I want to be well-read. I want my writing to be out there. If you don't feel fully confident that you know how to start a conversation based on a product that you feel confidence in.
So
well, I want to throw out here something I thought of, because let's say you've got something you think is good, covers, you know, like the artwork's good, it looks professional, people around you say, yes, this looks professional, and you know they feel comfortable telling you this too, because that's something people are like, oh, everybody tells me it's great. Well, are you the kind of person they can tell you it sucks? Most people aren't. You know, most people, your friends can't tell you it's not good, and you will never know. And if you want to live in the bubble, you think everything's right, they will entertain that bubble, they will let you keep that bubble. Assuming that it's good and that it's quality, that you won, people who are smart give you good feedback, you've used that feedback, and maybe you've tested it on an audience and you have reason to think it's good. Let's say you go to a convention, and we've seen this at magic conventions where a lot of tables are just tables filled with magic crap. Magicians show up there and they're filled with crap. The two best demonstrations I've ever seen were done by two radically different personalities. On one end of the spectrum, there's this guy named Mark Mason. He's from England. He's considered probably one of the best magic demonstrators in the world. He's a fantastic performer. He always brings some new clever magic tricks to a convention with him. And he's at his booth nonstop performing for people this stuff. And he's got this kind of raspy voice as he does the magic for you. And he sells. He cleans out. He's famous because he can fit all of his product into one suitcase. And he does flat packing on his DVDs and everything. And he can sell – he can do $20,000, $30,000 worth of business at a convention. Wow. Where other people are happy to make $1,000 because he's an amazing demonstrator. He's a great performer who does that. At the other end of the spectrum, two personalities who are fantastic in their own craft but are very quiet, soft-spoken people who are not – you would consider like super charismatic are the Buck twins, Dan and Dave. Dan and Dave, if you go to danandave.com, they are – some of the finest card magicians in the world. They're twin brothers who do amazing card flourishes, who've invented card flourishes, and have really done a lot to elevate the art of card magic. And they sell custom decks of cards, beautiful custom decks of cards. When you go to one of their booths at a magic convention, and they don't do a lot of them, very rarely, but when they do, they take it over like it's a boutique pop-up store. They will have a bookcase, they'll have nice carpet, they'll have furniture, they'll have a whole setup so you walk into like you've just walked into the most stylish, rich person's living room you've ever been in, and their products are displayed wonderfully well. I don't know how many they sell, but goddamn, it looks good. They well, have
and Dan and Dave have gone the other way to say, hey, listen, what's better than having a booth at a magic convention? Running your own magic conventions and having you own 50% of the booths, if not all of it. And they've done it with MagicCon. They've done it with CardistryCon. They have understood that by having a solid brand that everybody, all their customers understand, can identify, and can pick out of a lineup compared to what is very often a kind of Attack of the Clones world of magic sales online, that brand can then extend to, oh, I want the cards from that brand. I want to go to the convention from that brand. When I see that brand's booth at another at a convention, which again, not exactly a high bar to clear when it comes to classing up a booth at a magic convention. It's like, you know, oh, you sprang for the most expensive Kinko's option for your banner. You are truly Scrooge McDuck. No, they go above and beyond. They make it look like it's a gorgeous you know coffee shop in San Francisco.
Well, so back to Neshcon had the follow up question saying it's easy to say talk to them, but how do you get randos interested to listen? And the answer is it's the old salesman tactic of the person asking the question is the one in charge of the conversation. You just be present. Keep in mind, anytime you're at a place, you got traffic going to and from in front of you. You can either do something to grab their attention. You can announce that you're about to do something to grab their attention if you want to go the P.T. Barnum route. But for me, in the NACA market, people would pay an extra fee for the privilege of being allowed to perform magic in the booth because they knew it would engage people to get people in. I would not pay the extra fee for a performance permit or whatever. And instead, I would rather spend the time engaging with people on a personal level. So it's just a matter of establishing eye contact and asking relevant questions. You know, you say like, you know, like, hey, how are you doing? You know, where are you from? Or I saw that shirt. You know, is that maroon or puce? I can't tell the difference. It doesn't matter what gets you started, but then you very quickly engage in a real conversation. Be present with each other. Talk about anything except for please buy my book. And eventually find a place that you guys truly have a meeting of the minds, that you're genuinely on the same page together. And out of that, hopefully, will come a genuine dialogue that's relevant to your book. You can guide the conversation there. Just don't start there. Don't start by trying to close.
Yeah, I think it depends on, you know, what you're trying to sell. Like, I've never done an ACA. If I was trying to do an ACA, the thing I'd probably do is I would have a booth, I'd get a private suite, and then I would figure out who the bookers are, and I'd invite them to a private show. I would try to separate myself and make it feel like it's, you know, open bar, all the, give them reasons to go other than just the show, and spend the money on creating a very classy environment. So then when they go there, they go, oh, wow, this feels special. And if it's if I had a graphic novel and I'm at a, you know, comic convention, how do I, you know, if I'm trying to invite people in the characters, I'm going to do my best to make it look slick and professional and not make it look like I'm just some guy who showed up with a half-baked idea and a dream. I'm going to do cardboard stand-ups of the stuff. I'm going to have you walk by the booth and go, man, this feels like this is, you know, in my 5 feet of space, I'm going to make you think this is as real of a universe as anything DC or Marvel or anybody else could do. It'll take me longer, take me a lot more effort to do that, but that would be my goal, is I want everything to look top-notch and professional. I want them to imagine that I'm already, you know, when you look at how Image Comics originally came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden Image was rivaling these other, you know, properties. That's what I would try to do.
Yeah. So I guess the lesson is drop some money and look pro.
Another thing, too, is I'll tell you another idea you can do. Think about this is if it's a comic book or if it's a cover, and I was going to be at a convention and I knew that convention presences were important, is there a celebrity I can hire? So you'd be surprised at people who have name recognition that you might be able to hire to say, oh yeah, we had him play the cover model of this thing, you know, or he's done a, you know, a 15 minute audiobook version that we're giving away free.
Dude, by the way, Ernie Klein's Ready Player One, you know, huge geek phenomenon. They offered him the opportunity to read his audiobook, and Ernie could have done it. He's got a background, you know, he won slam poetry competitions. He's, you know, he knows how to act and how to tell stories and how to engage people, but he intentionally said, no, you know, who would be great and who I know is in the business of reading audiobooks, Will Wheaton. Please have Will Wheaton read my book. And of course he did. And that was an integral part of the whole audiobook phenomenon for Ready Player One.
Yeah, and it may not be – I mean, that could be an expensive undertaking to get somebody like him. But if you look at – if you're going to be in a – if you're going to be – let's say you're going to do the Toronto Comic Con. Is there a Toronto science fiction or fantasy celebrity, somebody who lives there locally, that you could say, hey, I'll pay you $1,000, sit at my booth, shake hands with people, meet people. I'm going to have you do – you know, you're going to do a 10-minute reading, whatever, of the book that we're going to give away or something. Give people an excuse to come by and get an autograph, and you print up, you know, you could get some of these people a lot cheaper than you might think, a lot cheaper than building displays and stuff. And, you know, it's Star Wars Celebration, humongous lines. People are paying hundreds of dollars to pay money to somebody who wore latex, you know, and you never saw their face in a Star Wars film. I would think about that. That's a quick and easy way. And also, when the local reporter is going to go there to go cover something, if you've got, you know, somebody paid out to go do that, it's more likely to get covered.
Oh my gosh. Well, and think about this. It doesn't, you know, you and I being magicians, we immediately think of like, oh, if you could just do a magic trick related to your whatever, or as, you know, call it a demonstration of a certain principle or whatever. It doesn't need to be that. If there's a physical object that you can locate, that's a manifestation of an idea in your book. As long as, you know, if there's a visual curiosity, think about every way to get people to experience what your book is about. That's not the book. whether it's, you know, whether it's a demonstration in real time, whether it's a physical object that, that engages people, that, that raises an eyebrow and makes them see things differently, figure out all the ways that you can express the same idea from a different angle.
Well, and yeah. just again, the product is the roadmap. Like all of this, yes, we can come up with a million ideas in abstract that could fit a million different types of products that could be great strategies. You will know it is the strategy for you, or at least you will have an intuition or a hunch, or you'll be better informed when you have a product that you understand and can see the value in, and specifically see the value where you can't see the value in other products. When you know that what you are selling is different than the thing that the sad indie comic guy is packing up with the $13 to his name from the convention. When you can see that difference, when you can understand objectively what that difference is and you understand what makes your product special, a lot of this is a lot clearer because now it's just a million different options in the sky. And it's really hard to say, okay, well, I would do this or I wouldn't do this. Or the way Andrew described this is really compelling. The way Brian described this is really compelling. You want to know why? Brian's got product and has for over 10 years, you know, or longer than that. Andrew's had product for a similar, if not longer, period of time. There is an idea that both of them have that this is how I sell this thing. I know what this thing is. I know who buys this thing. I know what speaks to them. I know what cuts through the clutter to the thing next to me.
That's a really good way to put it, because when the first I made the Bizarre Magic Show, then I went to a convention and I said, and it's a matter of looking at it, we're like, okay, what is it that this has that nothing else has? What is the story behind it? Figure out the story behind the whatever it is that you're selling. Is the story that it's the award-winningest book on the planet? Then tell that story. Is the story that in all of history, nobody has ever combined these three elements to make a 8-volume epic, then tell that story, you know?
If you, on the celebrity idea, again, you'd be surprised at what you could be able to get. Hey, you're Toronto? Want to know who's available in Toronto? Hayden Christensen.
What?
From Toronto.
Really?
Yeah, Michael Ironsides too. So oh my I'm just God. Looking at, like, look at the famous it's people the, from an
tons
area.
Of shoots in Toronto too, you know, so there's probably a lot of bored actors that are sitting in their
Arrow actors
with like $1,000 payday.
Man,
again, it's just one approach. But you can, you know, we had a buddy for his 40th birthday had the Fix come play, and the Fix was a big band in the 80s, and you know, for not a huge amount of money, I mean thousands of thousands, you know, cost them. I mean they were cheap, but they weren't ridiculously expensive. He hired them for his birthday, and that may not be practical for a lot of people, but if you look at what you're going to spend, if you want to get people at your booth and talking about your product. Buying somebody else's fame, buying somebody else's attention, or renting it rather.
If you have the money, and if you don't have the money, then just, you know, write 100 emails and try to befriend all those guys. Ask them for advice. And out of those 100 celebrities, local and available, you'll find one or two that are interested in reading your book and will be happy to, well, you know, engage with you.
Yeah. And also, like at the convention, you figure is your, you know, at a magic convention, your job is to sell magic. You know, it's very easy. You can get coverage in all the magic magazines, you know, for spending $6 on postage and you're done to get them to review your stuff. When you're trying to sell, if your goal is to sell product, then yeah, you want to create, how do I get people to the table and how do I get them into the product?
And there is a great thirst for that kind of stuff at conventions. I mean, you would not believe the lines for people who played the most inane elements of the grand kaleidoscope of Star Wars. You know, the puppeteer who did something for 4 seconds of screen time had 5 people lined up because they just want every autograph from everybody who had anything to do with Star Wars. And the same would go for Star Trek, Lord of the Rings, you know, like a lot of, you know, popular shows that are popular now. It's amazing.
Hey guys, I got steaks waiting for me to cook them downstairs.
I got a Butterfingers. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.